You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Friday. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Let me just say this. Every week that we survive, that we get through it, is a cause for celebration. And so I'm going to just tell you all now, Terry Barr, who usually joins me every Friday for the very last segment of our show at 5:50, we do a little thing called What's Good, Local, and Overlooked. Terry's on vacation this week. So I'm telling you now what we're going to do in the very last segment of today, which is to talk about your favorite haunted houses or fall experiences around Wisconsin. I've got a great big list of amazing stuff happening all across the state this weekend, but I want you to start thinking about and texting me about some of your favorite fall places so that I can share them during that last block of the day. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I have some favorites back from when I was a teenager, and this was a big deal. I used to go to a lot of haunted houses, which is probably why these days I think the real world is scary enough without scaring my pants off in some contrived experience. So we're going to have some fun in that last segment, albeit without Terry this Friday afternoon. We also have a great guest coming up at 4:30. It's Professor Michael Wagner. He is a professor of mass journalism at UW-Madison. We're going to be talking about what I'm going to term the, quote, Hegseth Declaration, which basically amounted to this very weird, vaguely worded requirement for the Department of Defense or the Pentagon Press Corps to sign the state. It was very strange. Virtually all of our nation's major news outlets refused to sign it, including Fox News. And all of those journalists basically staged a walkout on the day that was the deadline to either sign or lose your press credentials. We're going to talk to Professor Wagner about that. What is that portending, right? What does that mean when a major government agency that takes down a huge, huge portion of the federal budget, meaning the Department of Defense, basically says to reporters, sign this vague statement of I read the thing. I don't even know what it really says. It doesn't really sound like they have to get pre-approval for stories, but kind of. I don't even know what any of it means. What does that portend for the Fourth Estate writ large during Trump's second administration? So we'll have that conversation starting at 4:30. And of course, I'm so excited. We have gubernatorial candidate Missy Hughes joining me at 5:00. This is the first interview she's given to anybody at Civic Media, so I'm so thrilled to have her with us. I've got tons of questions for her. I think her candidacy is one of the more fascinating entries into the Democratic primary side of the 2026 gubernatorial race. So all of that, so much more coming up. Of course, we got Ask Maggie because it is Friday at 5:30. I think I blew through it the last couple of weeks because there was so much news, but we're doing it today, gosh darn it. We all need a little relief from the headlines. But there are some headlines to get to, folks, and I have to start with some bad news this Friday afternoon. The Trump administration has denied Wisconsin's request for federal emergency management aid after the devastating August floods. It's truly, I think, a sad moment when it appears very clearly that a president is deciding who to help based on who needs the help and not the level of need, the level of destruction. That there is now a litmus test of expressed loyalty and voter turnout for Donald Trump. And that's somehow a determining factor for whether or not aid goes out. It appears to be the case. The bulk of the damage and the harm from those August floods was centralized in Milwaukee County. Federal Emergency Management Agency staff were on scene following those, what they call, quote, thousand-year floods that we had. We now understand, we've talked about it a lot on this program, that the term thousand-year or hundred-year flood is a misnomer. It's based on decades-old data. It's why we're seeing these floods not every thousand years or hundred years, but every few years. This flood was estimated by Federal Emergency Management Agency personnel that showed up on scene after the flooding to have caused more than $26.5 million in verified and, quote, eligible disaster relief compensation. But the vast majority of that, $22 million of that $26.5 million, was in Milwaukee County, which, as everybody knows, is a reliably Democratic and blue county in the state. The communication from the Trump administration in denying the aid was perfunctory. It was sent by this dude named Keith Turry, Associate Administrator for the Office of Response and Recovery at FEMA. And it just said, based on the results of preliminary damage assessments, the public assistance program is not warranted. Says who? I mean, this is ridiculous to me. Ridiculous. Really no rationale. Again, this is following other FEMA staff being on scene and saying, yeah, there are verified and eligible disaster recovery costs from this incredible flood. The impacts, again, weren't just in Milwaukee County, however, though that is the majority. Look at the other counties that were also impacted who will also now be forced to use their local tax dollars, which are stretched to the absolute maximum everywhere in the state, in every county. How about these counties? Because some of these sound like the Republican counties. Ozaukee, Washington, Waukesha, Door County is a little bit of a toss-up, Grant County. You know, Ozaukee and Washington counties go for Trump by huge margins. He's also screwing them. So this is this theme, right, that I see happening over and over and over again, that in the president's petulance, he's like, a preteen adolescent boy. I think that needs to be our foil these days. Like, what would a preteen adolescent boy do if he was leading FEMA or was the president or whatever it is? Because if it's petulant and retributionary and knee-jerk, that's basically what you can expect is going to happen. But this sort of situation happens over and over and over again with these thoughtlessly cruel policies and decisions designed to be cruel, where folks that are Trump supporters end up getting hurt because they're so worried about trying to infer or, you know, punish regions or jurisdictions that they think are more blue. And this is a perfect example of that. So is the big brutal bill. So is Republicans' continual refusal to negotiate with Democrats in good faith for a permanent restoration of the ACA subsidies. They're hurting their own base. So too here. Governor Evers said this: denying federal assistance doesn't just delay recovery. It sends a message to our communities that they are on their own and that the Trump administration doesn't think over $26 million in damages to public infrastructure is worthy of help. I couldn't disagree more. David Crowley, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, said this: the decision leaves the county on the hook for $22 million in damages to public infrastructure. That decision to deny the state's request is extremely disappointing. The preliminary damage estimate showed that the damage sustained throughout all six counties is more than substantial. Senator Tammy Baldwin posting this on X: it's been more than a month since disaster hit Wisconsin and families are hurting. I have been fighting for these funds because Wisconsinites need help now. Wisconsinites need help and they need it now. I'll work closely to continue to monitor the situation and make sure Wisconsin gets everything we need to be on the road to recovery and the whole of government recovery effort does right by all Wisconsinites. Just terrible. complete failure of leadership. The meta point here, I think the theme for the entire Trump administration is this: this is not a president for all Americans. He's not a president that'll defend our constitutional rights for all Americans. He doesn't want to be a president for all Americans. He only wants to be a president. He only wants to defend people's rights if you're his people. And regardless of whether or not you supported Donald Trump or not, we deserve better than that from all of our elected officials, and most certainly from our president. A sad day that is so petty and yet so devastating to these communities. You know, of the six counties, basically five of them tend to vote majority for Republicans. So he's punishing five out of the six counties simply because he wants to get back at Milwaukee County? You've got to be kidding me. It's just, it's so vengeful. It's so unpresidential. It's so un-American. You know, one of the things that I think as a Wisconsinite, as a native Milwaukeean, and certainly as an American, that I have always thought is a shared value that we all have, especially here in this state, is that we show up for our neighbors. We show up for each other, especially when disaster strikes, that we care about one another and that we're not going to not care for somebody when they are in the wake of a terrible disaster because of who they might have voted for. That is not who we are. And yet that is very much who this president is, very much so. It makes me angry as a Wisconsinite and as someone who has tried to help, who has been the recipient of help from neighbors and friends, who comes from a family of public servants. My mom was a nurse. Come from a family of helpers. Come from a family of farmers on my mother's side of the family. Farmers show up for one another. Right, we just do that here. That is part of who we are. You see struggle, you see suffering, you stand up, you raise your hand, and you help. You don't bother to ask them, well, excuse me, before I help you out, I need to know who you voted for last time around. Shameful. Folks, when we come back, I am going to continue to dig into today's headlines and Donald Trump's plan for vengeance against his political enemies. There were quite a few developments. Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York, pleading not guilty and filing a motion to disqualify U.S. Attorney Lindsey Halligan. We're going to talk about that, as well as the bombshell that dropped out of the Department of Justice in Donald Trump's plan to seek vengeance from Adam Schiff. That seems to be imploding. So don't go anywhere. I got all that and so much more coming up for you next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Dawn. It's Friday. We got through another one, folks. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Before the break, I had been sharing my thoughts about Donald Trump's denial of the request for FEMA funds for six counties in Wisconsin that together sustained over $26 million in damages from those devastating August floods. It can be nothing, summarized as nothing more than petty. Got a couple of great questions. We got a caller on the line about that. Kevin texting in on the WAUK text line. That's where I come to you from. Remember, WAUK now has a big time FM signal all across southeastern Wisconsin. You can find us at FM 100.3 and always on 540 AM. Kevin asked this, now that the Chevron doctrine has been overturned, Maggie, can Milwaukee sue FEMA for the funds, like when Big Oil sues the EPA? I think that might be possible, Kevin. And Kevin gets an A for the day for knowing what the Chevron doctrine is and how important it was. It was a doctrine that in the past gave agency determinations effectively the benefit of the doubt, unless the congressional legislation which conferred upon that agency particular powers to regulate or enforce particular laws specifically did not allocate that power to the regulatory agency. Again, Chevron doctrine basically said, we presume that the agency action is invalid unless these very specific factors are met. So with Chevron gone, there's a greater opportunity to challenge agency actions. I think that'll be at play here, Kevin. Great question. The governor's office announcing today that they are appealing FEMA's decision. There is an administrative appeal process, which is necessary to complete before you would actually file suit. Hey, Attorney General Josh Call, I hope you got this one on your watch list because, yeah, to me, this merits a lawsuit for sure. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Hi, Joe from Madison. Happy Friday to you. What you got for us?
Yeah, I hope you have a good weekend, you and everyone working there. I wanted to react to, two things. First off, what Kevin brought up is fascinating, particularly because it points to, with the erosion of things happening in various areas of the Trump presidency, this may open up the possibility for some different responses, like saying, okay, Chevron doctrine isn't valid anymore. Okay, then we get to sue. Which will be go to court. And it's not unlike that Montana project that you were speaking of yesterday, which is a great bit. I urge everybody to go back and listen to that. And I hope you return to that, Maggie, to sort of say, look, okay, let's look at what where the legal situation is. But underneath it all, Maggie, is the idea of, I mean, it's so basic. We are a United States. And if we aren't there for each other in something as basic as a big honking flood that leaves people devastated, absolutely devastated. You know, there's problems with mold remediation. There's problems with fixing dry rot, all of that obnoxious, god-awful health scary stuff that goes on. And if it isn't in Milwaukee County, by God, it was up in Alaska last week, wasn't it? Didn't they have big floods? I mean, either we're together or we're not. If we aren't a United States, then we're just like a loose collection of states that maybe sometime might
a federation, that's not a constitutional republic. A federation is an alternative form of government. That's not what we're supposed to have here. We're supposed to have a uniter in chief. Donald Trump is the divider in chief. Thanks so much, Joe from Madison. Charles from Milwaukee, sir. Always nice to see you on my caller line. Happy Friday to you. What you got for us?
Happy Friday to you as well, Maggie. Have we ever had a president this petty before?
No, not in modern American history. Nixon was a very petty, thin-skinned man, which impeachment and resigned out of office. But I don't think Nixon comes anywhere close to the thin-skinnedness and pettiness, the childishness of this president.
I mean, the whole fact that he says that he's only the president for basically people that voted for him, that's not a president, and it cracks me up when we have certain conservative listeners out there that will say, "Well, Joe Biden was a divider, Obama was a divider," and I've never heard them talk like, "Well, we're not going to send money to Tennessee because it's a red state, or we're not going to send money to Florida to help with the hurricane relief because it's a red state." And my next one is, how much of this money is Donald Trump pocketing?
There's a lot of questions about Trump corruption. I just want to take up for a moment. I think, Charles, you brought up a great point. I know conservatives will lambast various policies from Barack Obama or Joe Biden. That's fair. We can always argue about policies or what some president did or didn't do. But I cannot point to a single policy from either Joe Biden or Barack Obama that was designed, or a decision that was designed to preference their supporters over others. In other words, you can disagree with how Joe Biden or Barack Obama operated as a president, some of their policies. You can say, I don't like the ACA. But to qualify for the ACA and to get health insurance, they weren't asking you who you voted for, right? Like, that wasn't a benefit that was only available to some. Now, on a very cheeky basis, I have seen commentators suggest, Well, you know what benefits you get from your local and state and federal government? Everybody's got to walk around with a card. And you get the benefits that you voted for. You don't get anything more if you voted for a different sort of policy packages. That's not what we do here. That's always tongue in cheek. But it does raise an interesting point about, do people actually understand what they're voting for when they go into that booth? Or is it purely or mostly an emotional calculation? We're going to have to leave this discussion. When we come back, we dig in to the Pentagon's press policy and what it means for holding government accountable with Professor Michael Wagner of UW-Madison. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. And welcome if you're just joining me. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. And remember, folks, the very last segment of today, I'm going to be talking about our favorite haunted houses, favorite fall events from your childhood, or perhaps if you are a Halloween aficionado, from your adulthood going on across the state, because we don't have our beloved Terry Barr with us. So you folks are going to be leading the charge as we close out the show today. You want to get your suggested events for this weekend, your favorite haunted house memories in, text those in at 855-752-4242. 4842, that's 855-75-CIVIC. I use that as a bridge to our next discussion because I'm not a journalist. I say this on the show all the time. I am an opinion entertainer. That is what this program is. I do my best every day to get it right. I invite fact-checking from you all, our wonderful listeners. I will correct myself when I get things wrong. But we rely as a democracy on news journalism. It is the vehicle by which us regular folks who have jobs and kids and people that we're caring for, we're going about our busy lives. We rely on news journalists to help us hold government accountable. Without good journalism, we don't know what the hell government's doing. Now, we know that newspapers have been facing absolutely dire economic circumstances. We have less locally based news outlets than ever in modern history. This is all making it harder for regular people to hold every level of government accountable. But when you think about the department with one of the largest line items of budget, when we're talking about our federal budget, it's the Defense Department, our military, the Pentagon. And so we've got a great guest with us this afternoon. He is Professor Mike Wagner from UW-Madison. He's a professor of mass journalism, the William T. Evju Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin Idea, and the director of the Center for Communication and Civic Renewal, to help us understand what has been going on at the Pentagon, because admittedly, I'm a wee bit confused. So welcome, Mike. I really appreciate you making time on a Friday afternoon. Let's level set for our listeners. I think most people, if you're paying attention to the political news, know that back in early-ish September, there seemed to be an initial press policy announcement from the DOD. Then they rolled out something in writing and gave a deadline to all news outlets that had Pentagon access. Tell us what these policies said and what exactly is going on here.
Yeah, great to be with you. You know, for years, decades, centuries, reporters have covered the Pentagon, the White House, you know, our federal government. And of course, there are some restrictions, right? You need to get a press pass. You have to, you know, get credentials. And these are things where you demonstrate you're a part of a legitimate news organization. And there are some rules you have to abide by. And in a place like the Pentagon, there are always some places you can't go for security reasons. But in general, reporters had a lot of freedom to move around and talk to folks and do their reporting in and outside of the building to help cover all things Defense Department related so that the citizens can, judge for themselves how well their country's being governed. In September, right around the time the president himself said he didn't think the Pentagon should be in the business of telling people how to cover the news. Right around that same time, a policy change was announced on, I think, September 20th. And then it was later revised, but the first policy that was announced literally forbade journalists from publishing things that had not been approved by government officials and gave journalists like a 10-day window to sign and agree to those restrictions. They backed off of that and then in early October put forth a second policy change announcement. And, you know, can still deem journalists security risks if they publish things that the Pentagon does not like. And the current policy change announced by the Pentagon does a lot more of the restriction on the side of the Pentagon and people who work for the U.S. government and not on reporters, preventing them from sharing different information, you know, with reporters. And there already are a lot of laws on the books about that. And of course, journalists' job is to go out and try to get people to talk to them anyway and provide evidence to them anyway. But this was, you know, kind of an aggressive and, according to First Amendment experts, unprecedented policy change in the kind of ongoing push-pull between the government, whoever's in charge, and the news media that try to cover it.
I just want to zoom out for a moment, because I think for folks that may not be as versed as you are in how journalism works. So in the past, and for decades, if not 100 plus years, again, there were process requirements to be vetted, confirm that you are a legitimate news reporter, to have a pass. There are always places you can't go, there's confidential information. But for journalists, what is the standard? Like, if an employee of the U.S. government at any level comes to you and brings you intelligence, and I don't necessarily mean, you know, central intelligence agency sort of intelligence, but brings you a story and says, hey, I want to tell you about this, what is the typical process and how is this different from that? Like, what was changing from the way in which, and I'm just going to set this level, that journalists that subscribe to the highest standards of news reporting and journalism, how do they approach that, setting aside these bizarre new restrictions from the DOD?
Yeah, so when journalists get access or the promise of access or potential access to explosive information, classified information, and the like, they usually engage in a pretty rigorous process of working with their editors to figure out, okay, what can we report? If we're going to report this, like, if so, once the reporting persuades the journalists that they have it accurate, like, they, we think this is true, and we have lots of good reasons to believe this is true, then there is the ethical consideration of what are the consequences of telling this story. Like, this is why journalists almost never would report things like troop movements before a surprise attack, right? American troops are, you know, like, are going to engage in a sneak attack, you know, in a country X tomorrow. Like, journalists don't report those kinds of things, even if they learn it, even if they're sure that they're right, right? And so there are some things that journalists just would not report.
Yep.
And the other information, of course, they still, even if they decide this is, you know, within the public interest, we're confident that we're right, they still give the government, you know, the opportunity to comment, to make their own case, you know, and the like. And so there's a push-pull behind the scenes for lots of foreign policy and, frankly, domestic policy reporting, you know, that occurs. Here, one of the big differences is the journalists are being threatened with losing their press credentials if they write stories the Pentagon doesn't like. Journalists could be deemed security risks if they write stories the Pentagon doesn't like. And all of this is happening in a context where, over the past couple of decades, the courts have been less muscular in their support for an expansive understanding of press freedom. The courts have generally been on the side of free press reporting, but they do less writing about it and full-throated endorsement of it than they did 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 years ago.
So with that as the context, what ended up happening when the deadline was finally reached, which happened, I believe 2 weeks ago, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, around the 14th, I think, was somewhere, yes, somewhere in there, I think, was the deadline. And most folks, you know, most organizations, I should say, did, yes, not sign. And not just legacy outlets like the New York Times or middle of the road, but journalism first organizations like NBC, CBS, ABC, and Fox
the
News,
AP,
but like,
yep.
like, you know, lots of far right wing, you know, organizations also, did not sign this, request demand from the Pentagon. And so, most news organizations, even those that have a heavy opinion component, see this as an affront to the ability to conduct, you know, a relentless pursuit of the verifiable truth in a democratic country.
The relentless pursuit of the verifiable truth. It is how democracy is served. Again, folks, if you're just joining us, I've got Professor Mike Wagner from UW-Madison. He is a professor of mass journalism. He runs their Center for Communication and Civic Renewal. We're talking about the DOD press policy change. Just to summarize, these are just, this isn't a complete exhaustive list. These are the press, the media outlets, the news reporters that have had their credentials yanked. They no longer have access at the Pentagon. The Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times, the Associated Press, Reuters, CNN, NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, the Washington Times, the Washington Post, the Washington Examiner, the Atlantic, the Hill, Politico, and the Guardian, as well as, here's one of those right-wing outlets, Newsmax. When Newsmax will not sign the policy, ladies and gentlemen, this is what we call the proverbial warning flag. With that as context, who has agreed to do this? And I understand from my research that I was doing, One America News previously had a pass. They agreed to sign it, but we now have a spate of new outlets that are, quote, covering the Pentagon, the list of which, I don't know, causes me grave concern, I will put it, Professor. Who do we have that's now supposedly providing America's best upfront news about what's happening in the Department of Defense?
A lot of organizations that are most famous in public and academic circles for spreading rumors, like Gateway Pundit, I think, is one.
Yes.
The Lindell News Network.
Yes, Lindell TV.
Which, you know, is Mike Lindell, who is most famously known as the MyPillow guy, his network. And so these are not what we would think of as news organizations that have a track record of accurately reporting the verifiable truth, especially with respect to correcting mistakes. You know, for whatever you think of an MSNBC or a Fox News or a Newsmax or the Huffington Post, you know, when news organizations make errors, they say so. Yeah. Usually not as prominently as they made the error, but places like Gateway Pundit, Lindell TV, they don't do that. And, you know, also come at news coverage with an extraordinarily ideological point of view, which in this case pleases the ideological position of the Pentagon.
And this morning on X, it was announced that disgraced Alex Jones's InfoWars now has a Pentagon press pass.
Oh, I hadn't seen that. This is a group that so defamed the families in the Sandy Hook mass shooting that, you know, they essentially destroyed Alex Jones's, you know, financial life because of the false things that he repeatedly said about those folks. And so this is an information and entertainment organization that is most well known for saying things that are not true.
For lying.
Covering the Department of Defense.
Yeah.
With a legitimate press pass.
We're going to talk with Professor Wagner on the other side about what this means more broadly for government accountability and really the crisis that we all face in terms of holding government accountable when we do not have a shared understanding of facts or the standards to which reporters are held. Don't go anywhere, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Get in your favorite haunted houses now. I'm going to be reading off a bunch of them and some fun things going on across Wisconsin before we close out this show. 855-752-4842. But more pressing matters first. I'm joined for the balance of this hour by Professor Mike Wagner of UW-Madison. He is their William T. Evju Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin Idea, as well as their Director of the Center for Communication and Civic Renewal. We've been talking, Mike, about the new DOD press policy, which has resulted in basically across the spectrum. You know, you've got the Washington Examiner, the Washington Times, the Wall Street Journal, FT, Financial Times, as well as Fox and Newsmax on sort of the right end of the spectrum. But all of the major news outlets, the straight news, and even those outlets that people tend to think might have a little lean to them, basically all of those major outlets no longer have press credentials at the Pentagon. And in their stead, we now have what I'm going to call not credible. These are not reliable news outlets, including Gateway Pundit, Lindell TV, InfoWars, The Turning Point USA News Arm, and One America News. This means that it is harder, all else being equal, for regular folks to, one, know what's going on just as a base level at the Pentagon, and two, to help decide how they want to vote, which is our ultimate accountability metric for government actors. And I wanted to just ask you, where do we sit? Like, how, what level of peril as an expert in journalism and the media are we in as a democracy? Not as partisans, not as people that might vote for one party or another, but for regular people in a democracy trying through the franchise, through our voting franchise, to hold government accountable. What state of peril are we in when this kind of thing is happening? And when you see an administration that's been very hostile to news media, that is not inclined to support their particular viewpoints, and has threatened to, you know, reform libel and slander laws and to go after news outlets. Are we at risk here?
We are, I think. The organizations that measure how free a democratic country is and do these measures, you know, regularly have been showing the United States has been declining in these measures over the last few years. And so we're declining in our overall set of democratic freedoms, according to, you know, independent and repeated measures. Now, it's hard to know when the balance tips so much that you just fall off the scale. And, you know, and it's probably not this particular thing that that causes that balance to shift in the most dangerous and egregious of ways. And yet, it's a very loud canary in the coal mine. And one reason that it is that you see news organizations who have opinion sides and in some cases news sides that directly support the president and the Secretary of Defense also not signing. So when people are willing to engage in costly talk, like when a Packer fan says the instant replay that shows the sideline catch for the Packer has him juggling the ball, so it's bad for the Packers that he didn't catch it. When the Packer fan admits that, right, they're engaging in costly talk. And here, news organizations that support the president are saying, no, this is not good. And that should be a clear and present sign to everyone that this is serious business. Now, the Pentagon isn't saying we're gonna jail reporters, but they are saying that reporters can be deemed security risks. And that's a potential slippery slope to imprisoning folks who report the independent and verifiable truth. And again, like the initial thing the Pentagon sought to do, which they did walk back from, was to literally get government approval before journalists could write stories, right? A press is not independent if they have to ask permission.
It literally boggled my mind, having worked in government for a long time, having interacted with press both at the national, state, and local level numerous times. I thought, I would have never had the audacity to tell some reporter that you're not going to be able to talk about anything relating to my department that I ran unless I sign off on it. It's literally not journalism then. It's a propaganda machine.
That's right.
Are we looking at news outlets that fit more properly for people to see them more as propaganda and less as news? I mean, I think that's where we're at a bit.
Well, it seems to be what the Secretary of Defense is looking for in terms of who he wants to allow in the Pentagon to have more direct access to cover what it is he and his staff are up to. Like, it certainly appears that way based upon his behavior.
Yeah, there's so much that I could talk with you about, Mike. I know my senior producer, Jamie Martinson, is listening right now. I'm going to ask Jamie to reach back out to you because I'd like to talk to you again for a longer period about the corporatization of media.
It's a great topic.
Right? Like legacy media versus what we're seeing from these independent, sometimes online media. Where do people go? How should people vet information, the news that they're reading? And really, what is the new environment that we're in? Because it is very changed. And underlying all of that, I've had this argument with folks close to me for many years now about, is media liberal or not? And I always made the argument that you have a corporate media. And so if you understand it in that way and profit seeking and what that incentive structure means, and as well now how we see that in the online formula, so much to unpack. We're going to have you back if you will grant us the grace of your presence again, Professor.
It would be my great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So important. Thank you to Professor Michael Wagner of UW-Madison. When we come back, I'll be joined by gubernatorial candidate Missy Hughes, her uphill battle for the governor's mansion, and her new approach to Wisconsin Democratic politics. We discuss next. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.